Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Lake Show, a lovely summer night here in the middle of May in these parts. The problem, rain in Baltimore. The Twins and the Orioles were not able to play game one of that series tonight at Camden Yards. And there's a ton of rain out east. You look at the weather map, and it's literally going to rain all night from North Carolina up through Virginia and Maryland. And right now, Baltimore getting rain, but to the west of there, there's flood warnings, et cetera. 100% chance of rain tonight. That chance will drop tomorrow. As a result, they're going to try and get in a doubleheader with the lineup card at 10:30 our time. First pitch of game one at 11. Bailey Ober will try and keep the streak going. And then Simeon Woods Richardson will play game two. You'll hear them both. And then, of course, getaway day game on Thursday as well. And there still is a chance of rain in the forecast. And then the Twins head for Milwaukee, and they have a roof there for a weekend series. So, once again, rain in Baltimore. No Twins game tonight. They'll try and play two tomorrow. Right now, we're going to shift gears and talk space flight with Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. Stephen, it's been a while. How are you doing?
Doing fine, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Everyone's kind of waiting for SpaceX to launch that gigantic starship again down in Texas. Two in a row have not gone well. And I would assume the delay is to solve a number of problems with the upper stage or the ship itself. First of all, the booster or super heavy has performed beautifully. It's been the problem with the upper stage. When will it fly again?
Well, right now the indications are that it could fly next week, perhaps as soon as a week from tomorrow, May 21st, according to some warning notices that have gone out to advise ships to steer clear of the track out across the Gulf from South Texas. We're waiting on SpaceX to officially confirm that, and also SpaceX is still waiting for FAA licensing for this next flight. But I expect that to come either at the end of this week or beginning of next week. So things are coming together for the ninth flight of Starship next week. SpaceX test fired the upper stage, or the ship, as you mentioned, yesterday down at Starbase in South Texas. And at this point, they're putting the final touches on the vehicle. They've rolled the booster out to the launch pad, and soon the ship will go to the launch pad and be stacked on top of it. They'll run some tests and hopefully launch next week. And, you know, this is a critical test flight because SpaceX really with Starship, these last two test flights in January and March, the upper stage failed in a similar way. just before reaching its planned trajectory. It was late in the burn to get into space, and the engines cut off, and the vehicle lost control and spread debris out across the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos, out mostly at sea, thankfully not over land, but some fell on land at the Turks and Caicos and some of the islands there. And this next flight, I wouldn't say a lot's riding on it, because SpaceX, obviously, Elon Musk has a very deep pocket. So if it goes wrong again, they can fix it and try again. But SpaceX wants to start flying these more often, and potentially they just got FAA approval earlier this or last week, rather, to fly up to 25 times per year. They're currently capped at 5 flights per year. So that's kind of where they want to get to. And in order for that flight rate to realize itself, they have to get a successful flight in next week. And, you know, they can't go back to the drawing board again and wait 2 or 3 months for the next flight. So, you know, it's an important flight. And this is really the most significant setback that SpaceX has had in any of its rocket or space programs in almost a decade, with these two back-to-back Starship failures. But SpaceX is much more financially solvent. Elon Musk has a lot more money than he had a decade ago, so they're going to keep plugging.
Yeah, and they have so much going on and so much business on their Falcon 9 workhorse that the launches, as they continue to build their Starlink low-level satellite constellation to provide internet, and then I would assume at some point a cellular phone service or some sort of service like that through those satellites, that they are almost footnotes now. Oh, they launched another rocket and they landed the first stage on a barge or back on land and everything went fine. But this is a quantum leap, if you will, in the size of the rocket. And the fact that it is ideally 100% usable. Now, Stephen, they had some test launches before the failures of Ship, and were pretty pleased. They were able to get most of the way around the Earth and actually bring the ship through the atmosphere again and land it. Is it a design change? What has changed that caused these last two failures? What do we know?
Yes, Steve. So these last two failures in January and March, these were the first two flights of an upgraded design of the ship. So SpaceX calls it version 2 or block 2 redesign of the ship, with supposedly it has improvements. It carries more propellant. They've redesigned some flaps to give it more aerodynamic stability. They have improved the heat shield for it to be able to survive reentry better. And then notably, I think related to what's causing the failures, is they've redesigned parts of the propulsion system, including the big lines. These are you know, big propellant feed lines that flow liquid oxygen and liquid methane at cryogenic temperatures. These lines are a foot in diameter or more, going from the propellant tanks down to the 6 engines at the bottom of the ship. And they've redesigned how those lines are routed through the propulsion system. They've simplified it to make it easier to manufacture. And they've added some jacketing around the lines to improve insulation. But all of that, you know, that has a purpose to improve the performance of the rocket, but something in that appears to be causing fuel leaks, propellant leaks during the flight. And the rocket in January, we know the investigation concluded that there was a propellant leak that caused some fires in the engine compartment, and that eventually led to engine failures and then a loss of control. We haven't seen the official report from what happened on the March flight, but it failed in a very similar way. I wouldn't be surprised if it did come to a similar so-called proximate cause of the failure. However, the root cause of the failure, I think, is I'm curious to see what SpaceX concludes in this investigation in the coming days, once they release the summary, the results of that. because in January they concluded that the resonance of the entire rocket, basically the engines, you know, create a lot of shaking, a lot of vibrations.
Oh,
and
sure.
Those were in tune with the resonance of the entire structure of the rocket that kind of amplified those vibrations and led to a break in the fuel flow system. And they redesigned parts of the rocket before the March flight. They made some changes, failed again. So maybe they didn't have the root cause correct, or maybe they, you know, maybe they didn't fix the right thing. So I'm really eager to see in the next few days what SpaceX says once they release the results of the investigation.
And then ultimately they fly again, so there is a lot riding on it, but they'll continue to fly. I mean, their track record is that, you know, if you first don't succeed, try again. And they build it, they fly it, they fix it, and they move on. But there is also these ambitious goals of part of the Artemis program to assist putting humans back on the moon, and then ultimately trips to Mars. And here we are in May, and I know things can change, and they have a successful flight or two under their belt, and they're back on track. But if this flight is a failure or a ship doesn't do the things they want it to do, that, you know, it's kind of back to the drawing board, and all of those other plans get pushed out even further.
Yeah, you know, if this one fails again, I suspect they won't be able to launch again until, you know, late summer, perhaps, or fall. If it goes well, I wouldn't be surprised if they launch again in June, to be honest with you. Right. So that's the kind of, you know, a few months of difference in the schedule will be the consequence of the outcome of the flight next week. And one thing, you know, I've thought about, if this flight goes poorly, you know, this is the version 2 of the Starship. SpaceX is well into the design and development of version 3 of Starship, which is the version that they're going to make operational, basically, to actually, you know, land on the moon, to have refueling tankers, to create this entire ecosystem of starships doing, you know, as tankers, as satellite deployers, as moon landers, as Mars landers. They're going to have different versions of this vehicle to do all those things. Well, that's based on the next version, Block 3 of the ship. And it wouldn't shock me, actually, if version 2 fails again this month, that SpaceX may just accelerate version 3 and try to get that on the launch pad as soon as possible.
We have much more coming up. We'll talk about the future of the Artemis program and the Space Launch System. We'll also talk about some Soviet-era space junk as well. All of this coming up with Stephen Clark. He's joining us from Ars Technica here on News Talk 830 WC. Stephen Clark joining us, Ars Technica. He covers space flight. We talked a great deal about Starship, and Test Flight 9 could be coming up very soon, and quite a sight. I'd love to get down there and see one of these things. One thing we can say before we move on, Stephen, they seem to have the super heavy booster, or that first stage, pretty much figured out. It launches, they've been able to bring it back to the pad and catch it with the chopstick arms. I mean, that alone is worth the price of admission. I mean, they're literally launching a building and bringing it back.
Yeah, it's an amazing sight to see. I've been down there. I was down there last October for the very first time that they recovered and caught the Super Heavy booster back on the launch pad, and it was one of the most incredible, exciting things I've ever seen in person. And I hope to go back actually next week for the flight again and see that with my own eyes once more. So it is an incredible thing to behold. And of course, this is the largest rocket in the world, 400 feet tall, and the largest rocket ever built. The first stage has 33 engines. The upper stage has 6 engines. So, you know, a layman's assessment would maybe suggest that the first stage with 33 engines is more complicated. And, there are caveats to that because the ship does have a different purpose. and it needs to go all the way into space and into orbit ultimately. But the booster is an incredibly complex piece of machinery. It's it by itself is almost 25 stories tall, and you know, it's coming back at several times the speed of sound, and kind of slams on the brakes by reigniting some of its engines to slow down and be caught by the launch tower. One thing I'll note is the flight next week, Flight 9, will actually be reusing one of the Super Heavy boosters that flew previously back in January. So we mentioned that the test flights, quote-unquote, failed in January and March. Well, the booster performed nearly flawlessly on both of those flights. You know, the ship, the upper stage, was the problem. And the Super Heavy booster that launched and was caught by the tower, you know, recovered at Starbase in January, will fly again next week on Starship's 9th flight. And, you know, it took we're a little more than 2 years from the very first flight of Starship back in 2023. And it took about 7 years for SpaceX to actually reuse a Falcon 9 booster with its workhorse rocket. It took 7 years. This will happen in 2 years, and that's pretty remarkable. It's much more complicated than the Falcon 9, and we're making great progress with the booster.
Yeah, it is quite a sight to see. The videos are hard to take your eyes off. I can't imagine to be down there and see it live. You had a piece a few days back. By the way, Stephen Clark joins us from RS Technica on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline here on CCO about a Soviet-era spacecraft built to land on Venus, coming back to Earth. I love the photo as part of that story. It says CCP, like something out of a James Bond movie. It's really cool and a great story.
Yes, yes. This was really interesting and a fun story to research and to write. This spacecraft launched in 1972. It was supposed to go to Venus, as you mentioned. They had a rocket failure, the Soviet Union did, that stranded it in orbit around the Earth. It was not able to leave Earth. It was stuck in orbit. And it's been in that orbit for 53 years now. And then last Saturday morning, it finally reentered the atmosphere. Yeah. And the notable thing about this, aside from it just being in space for so long and being kind of a relic from the Cold War, is that this capsule, because it was going to go to Venus, actually had a heat shield on it. This capsule was about a half ton or so in mass. It was about 3 to 4 feet in diameter. It was kind of spherical in shape, and it had the heat shield to survive entry into the atmosphere of Venus. Well, that means that theoretically it would have survived reentry into Earth's atmosphere, which is actually thinner than Venus's. So the temperatures theoretically would be not as extreme. So there was a really good chance that this capsule would actually reach the Earth's surface in one piece, intact. And that would have been highly unusual for, you know, when satellites reenter, typically they burn up, they break apart. Some debris may survive and reach the Earth, but they're small fragments. And this thing was, you know, expected to come down in one piece, and it could have come down in land or over the ocean. Of course, 70% of our surface is ocean. So ultimately, the analysis from the Space Force and from Russia's Space Agency and the European Space Agency all agreed that it ended up reentering the atmosphere over the Indian Ocean, kind of west of Malaysia, and likely fell into the sea, probably intact. But had it fell on land intact, you know, it would have been falling at terminal velocity, you know, a couple hundred miles an hour. I don't know the exact speed, but it would have definitely cratered into the ground. You know, a part of me kind of wishes it had fallen on land away from population, obviously, so it wouldn't harm any property or people. But I would have loved to have seen the debris and what it looked like after so long in space. But alas, it's probably at the bottom of the Indian Ocean now.
Yeah, quite a story for sure. Last time we visited, we did kind of a deep dive, and we certainly don't have the time to do it. But every administration, every presidential administration, these big programs of NASA can be on the chopping block. And ever since President Trump was sworn in, you know, we've wondered aloud, will the Artemis program, will the space launch system as it's currently configured survive? And really, we still don't know for sure, but they've already got a lot of hardware paid for. Some of that will fly, but over the long haul, probably not. That at some point this program will go the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, Steve, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I've thought, certainly for the last couple of years, that it's inevitable that the space launch system will go away and be canceled. The only question was when. Well, the Trump administration is now proposing to fly the space launch system two more times on the missions they call Artemis 2 and Artemis 3. Artemis 2 could launch early next year, potentially. It'll carry four astronauts around the moon, around the far side of the moon, and back to Earth. That'll be the first time anyone's gone out to the moon or the vicinity of the moon in more than 50 years. And then Artemis 3 will actually attempt that first moon landing since Apollo. After that, the plan proposed by the Trump administration is to cancel the space launch system, to cancel the Orion spacecraft that is launched on top of it, and seek commercial options for transporting crew to the moon in the future. And there's a big emphasis in the Trump budget proposal, the blueprint that we have. We don't have the details yet, but there's an emphasis on going to Mars. It talks a lot about going to Mars, a lot more about going to Mars than going to the moon. And the focus, really, since the first Trump administration, less than 10 years ago, about 8 years ago now, proposed basically going back to the moon and having what they call a sustained presence at the moon, a base either in orbit or on the lunar surface that will be crewed long-term, you know, sort of like the International Space Station is. Well, in Trump administration number two, that the focus really has gone completely toward Mars, which aligns with Elon Musk's long-standing ambition to send people to Mars and to create a settlement on Mars. And, you know, the moon is we'll see. There's a lot of support in the Senate and in the House from lawmakers, especially those that represent key districts in Texas and Alabama and Florida, for keeping, if not the space launch system alive, at least keeping a focus on the moon in the near term, let's say for the next 10 to 15 years, whereas the Trump administration really isn't clear on how long it would hang around the moon before trying to press onto Mars. So that's going to be something that's going to be debated over the coming months, I think, and we'll see where Congress comes out. But I suspect the space launch system is done after the next two flights. The only question is, do they keep focusing on the moon or do they pivot to Mars immediately?
Yeah, and certainly with someone who appears to have a great deal of influence, Elon Musk and SpaceX has said the goal all along, everything they're doing at SpaceX, and even with Starlink, to fund all of this is to get humans to Mars.
Yes, exactly. And they've even studied, speaking of Starlink, one thing I'll mention is they've studied using Starlink at Mars. They haven't done it yet, but they've done some research on it. They had a contract with NASA for a study of how they could use Starlink at Mars to communicate between a base on Mars and back to Earth. So all of this, yeah, is really geared toward Mars.
Well, Stephen, I enjoy your work. I read all of it, and I'm so glad when you can join us here on the radio.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate the invitation.
Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, he covers space flight. Always great updates. So Starship may fly again, and that'll be a big one. Can they get ship back into what is close to Earth orbit and prove that this system does indeed work? It'll be a big one, quite a show. 8:32, quick break, we'll have the weather, and then we'll go to motorsports. Jordan Bianchi will join us from The Athletic, and we'll get you up to date on what's going on there as they head into their big All-Star weekend. And the longest race of the year, the Coca-Cola 600s, coming up fast here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins rained out in Baltimore.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
A double header tomorrow, lineup card at 10:30. Bailey Ober in game one as the Twins try and extend their winning streak. And then Simeon Woods Richardson in game two. Once again, our coverage begins at 10:30. There is some rain, maybe a thunderstorm, but it is raining in Baltimore. They called it this afternoon. Once again, they'll try and play two tomorrow. The getaway day game on track on Thursday. Then it's on to Milwaukee and the border battle with the Brewers starting on Friday night. Right now, we're going to turn to motorsports. Jordan Bianchi joins us, and he covers NASCAR for The Athletic. Jordan, it's good to visit with you again. I hope you're doing well.
Hello, my friend. Good to talk to you as well. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, good to visit with you. The sport gets to settle in to home base in North Carolina for the time being. North Wilkesboro and then Charlotte for the Coke 600 coming up on Memorial Day weekend, and this is kind of a nice break for the sport. I know the All-Star Open and the All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro, that track that Dale Earnhardt Jr. was so instrumental in helping bringing back to life, and then, of course, the Coca-Cola 600, the longest race of the year at Charlotte Motor Speedway. But, you know, this is a sport week to week. I mean, they're traveling around the country. It's all the teams and the media, et cetera. So I'm sure everyone's looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a nice little kind of respite, and NASCAR's in the middle of this 28 consecutive week stretch of races, which can be a lot, and so to have, you know, consecutive weeks at home is a nice thing for sure. And then you mentioned North Wilkesboro. I mean, this is, you know, this place goes back to the 40s, right? This is where this is NASCAR's roots, and a few years ago, this place was buried pretty much in decrepit and should have been condemned. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. and he led a barrage of people up there to basically rebuild it and bring it back to life. And now they're racing there again, which is wild, because if you would ask me a couple of years ago, and we probably did have this conversation actually about North Wilkesboro, yep, I would have been like, this is never happening, and now it is. So it's just wild that, you know, NASCAR is kind of back there, but this is one of those benchmark, you know, old school tracks that NASCAR needs to be at. In addition to all the other new stuff and cool stuff that they're doing, it's good to remain in touch with your roots as well.
Yeah, and the whole thing there's been a lot of stories, and I'm sure it's on YouTube everywhere. You can, you know, North Wilkesboro, and you know, the early days of Dale Earnhardt Jr. kind of walking around there, and you're like, so you're going to bring this back to life. And they have. It's really cool what they did. And, you know, I've seen some of those stories about how into it the community's been, mm-hmm, and how important it's been to that area in North Carolina to get it back. So that's coming up this weekend. Then it's on to the Coke 600. But I want to get your thoughts on the season so far. And you can't look too much beyond the number five. We all know Kyle Larson is a great talent. He wins at Kansas. He won on a short track at Bristol. He won on maybe the driver's favorite track of all down at Homestead. I mean, he's having a whale of a year.
He is. I mean, it feels like this is kind of Kyle Larson's world and everybody's just living in it. And this is what Kyle Larson does year after year. I mean, he is a generational talent. And, you know, the conversation always is, you know, who's the best driver in the world? Is it Formula One's Max Verstappen or is it Kyle Larson? And Kyle Larson makes his case for himself. And this week's a perfect example. You mentioned the Kansas win. Goes there, starts on the pole, you know, leads a 221 of 267 laps, just kicks everyone's butt, right? And then Monday night, he's in a sprint car racing at some dirt track in Indiana. And then, oh, by the way, today, he's in an Indy car preparing for the Indy 500. That's just who Kyle Larson is. In this stretch of races here, you talk about, you know, Indy 500's coming up and the Coke 600, Kyle Larson's going to end up doing the double. And he's going to run both races in the same day. I mean, this just, it really just feels like when it comes to motorsports, especially NASCAR or here in North America anyway, it just everything evolves around Kyle Larson because he is that good. And he is one of those drivers that years down the road, people are going to be talking about, telling their grandkids about because he's that kind of talent.
Yeah, another guy who's had a monster year is Christopher Bell. What a run early in the season. And, you know, another one of these young guys, Kyle Larson's been around longer. And then you have what we call the old-timers now in Denny Hamlin. I mean, they're kind of – Joey Logano got a win at Texas a couple of weeks back. But the point being is you got Kyle Larson, you got Christopher Bell, but don't forget about Denny Hamlin or Joey Logano.
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel kind of like the usual suspects. I mean, you talk about Larson, you talk about Christopher Bell. I'm going to throw William Byron in there, who won the Daytona 500.
Right.
You mentioned Denny Hamlin. It's kind of the guys we've talked about really for the last few years and who've kind of emerged. And it feels like this season is going to be about them. And I would throw Ryan Blaney in that mix, too. Ryan doesn't have a win this year, but really fast and honestly should have three or four wins. For sort of, you know, unfortunate due to circumstances beyond his control. And so it's just, it feels like the usual cast of characters have kind of coming to the center stage and we're kind of still waiting for maybe that outlier a little bit to emerge and maybe we won't, but it's certainly going to be interesting to see how this shakes up because the guys we all talked about all drive for the top teams as well. So it really does feel like a little bit of a stare down, if you will, which is not a bad thing. It's nice to see the cream rise of the crop every once in a while.
And by the way, with Kyle Larson doing the double, that's so weather dependent on what's going on in Indy and Charlotte as well. You know, I mean, hopefully the weather's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we dealt with last year. I mean, Kyle Larson was going to do the double. The Indy 500 got delayed many hours, and he ended up staying there, and he missed the Coke 600, and it was a whole kerfuffle about everything. And you really just would like to see Mother Nature cooperate. You know, to see Kyle Larson be able to do both these things is a treat. He is that kind of a talent. And I don't think anyone has any illusions that he's going to win at Indy, but he certainly could run in the top 10. He was running in the top 10 last year before he had an issue on pit road. And obviously he can always win in NASCAR. So like to see a guy do that, this is really special. And so you just hope that Mother Nature cooperates and allows him to do both.
Yeah, and hopefully you're planning ahead for June. Nashville, Michigan, Mexico City, the Poconos, Eastern Pennsylvania, and Atlanta all in June. You're going to pile up some miles, Jordan.
Yeah, I will be at every one of those, and I'll tell you what, it's a lot, and you're all over, but it speaks to the diversity of the NASCAR schedule, too, because, you know, we've had this conversation so much, Steve, about how the schedule needed to be changed year after year, and it just felt redundant. But then you just go back, and like Nashville's relatively new. Mexico City is a brand new event. Atlanta's a reconfigured racetrack. Michigan is down to one race. Pocono's down to one race. And then I'll throw even after that, you've got Chicago, 4th of July weekend, and you know, downtown Chicago. So it's just, the schedule is so different and so dynamic than it has been in years past. And it is fun to see. It makes it hard to kind of gauge on who's good and who's not because all the tracks are different. You don't really know. And you can't always carry over from week to week, but it sure makes things interesting.
Yeah, and I want to point out to Upper Midwest Rays fans, Iowa, NASCAR is back at Iowa Speedway, Sunday, August 3rd, the Iowa Corn 350 powered by ethanol, Newton, Iowa. Now the track got rave reviews for the first cup show there, but this track has been, you know, very well received. Drivers love it. It's great, and a great opportunity for Minnesota Race fans to get down there and see NASCAR.
Absolutely. Iowa is a fantastic racetrack, and it's only about four and a half hours away from the Twin Cities. So I highly recommend it. Just shoot east. That's really about it. Last year's race was the first time the Cup Series raced there. Packed the house, enthusiastic, energetic crowd, a lot of fun. Would expect the same thing this go-round. It's great to see Iowa on the schedule, and I hope the fans are back and they're packing it in again. They got a great show last year, and I think they're going to get a great show this year as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those. I work Saturdays. I have the show. I could get up early on a Sunday and be down there in time. I got to do it. I might even put in for a credential and hang out with you that weekend.
Let me know. I'll point you in the right direction. We'll score you away, and you can do the show down there again if you wanted to.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
It's really good, and I will tell people, like, I mean, it's in Newton, Iowa. And people are like, where's Newton? It's honestly about 40 minutes east of Des Moines. You can stay in downtown Des Moines. There's plenty of hotels, easy peasy, if you want to stay down there. Or I said you can make the drive back as well. So it is a cool place. It's a great track, and I'm so glad that after so many years, Iowa is back and found a place on the schedule.
Well, Jordan, always good to visit with you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and then some home cooking. Jordan, by the way, North Wilkesboro for the All-Star Race this Sunday. Look forward to it. And then the Coke 600 Memorial Day weekend, the longest race of the year. They'll go 600 miles at Charlotte Motor Speedway. 13 minutes now in front of 9 o'clock. It is.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Flag show, Stephen, for Henry tonight. We'll take a break. We'll kind of wrap it up, summarize the show. We've got all the news at 9 here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. It is the Lake Show. Henry has the night off. Twins got rained out in Baltimore. Doubleheader tomorrow. There's still rain in the forecast for the Baltimore area. Our pregame show, 10:30 a.m., game one at 11. Bailey Ober, game two, Simeon Woods Richardson. But they pulled the pin on the game today. What, about 2 o'clock maybe? 2:30 today, word got out that they weren't going to play today. So the Twins and Orioles will play two tomorrow and then a getaway day game on Thursday. NBA playoffs, Cavaliers are down, the number one seed in the East. They get beat by Indiana, 114-105. Pacers win that 4-1. If you had that on your bingo card, congrats. I certainly didn't see it, but Indiana moves on. Denver and OKC underway. That series tied at 2. Timberwolves can close out the Warriors tomorrow night. Josh, I am thoroughly convinced. Don't miss this opportunity. End it tomorrow night.
Yeah, put your foot on the throat. Make sure you end it. Kevin pointed out something that just nobody has really touched on. I've listened to other stations in this market, including ours, and I feel like I didn't get a chance to listen to Chad today, so I don't know if he touched on it maybe, but nobody is talking about the fact that that fourth quarter got a little dicey for a second. And I put on Twitter, it really put a bitter taste in my mouth. I understand a win is a win, but they got way too lackadaisical in that fourth quarter and kind of let off the gas a little too much for my comfort. And you can't do that tomorrow. Like, tomorrow has to be like it was a couple games ago, where you had that first quarter and it was just absolutely all Wolves. Every rebound was had. And I feel like that's another thing this team is failing to do. I've noticed over both in the Lakers series and more so even in this series, whenever there's a shot, I don't see a lot of big guys for the Wolves going into the paint. It's about 50-50, maybe even 40-60. But every time that there's a shot, I'm always like, why is there six Warriors players underneath the basket in the paint, but there's nobody down there to try and get a rebound? It feels like every other play, there's no rebound to be had, and it's kind of frustrating, I can't lie. So there's certain loose ends I think they really need to tighten up for tomorrow, but I think, honestly, the series is done regardless, whether it's tomorrow or the next couple games. I think they get it done tomorrow, but I understand a lot of people are upset that we didn't get Curry versus Ant, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, here's you know, the scenario. If Golden State finds a way, you know, if Curry comes back, my thought is you just can't count out one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you give them momentum, and you are right. Timberwolves looked bad in game one and didn't look particularly strong in the fourth quarter last night. But they had such a dominant third that, you know, they had enough breathing room to go up 3-1 in that series. And by the way, the Knicks in the early game could close out the Celtics. And you heard the news about Tatum out with the Achilles injury. That just brutal news. Feels so bad for him. That's just terrible, and a long, long recovery for him for sure. You heard the Vikes are going to play two in a row overseas in Dublin against the Steelers, and then they're going to get the Browns in London. And Chris Thomason, who used to cover the Vikings for the Pioneer Press, he's out in Denver right now. He sent out, is it a tweet or a post on X, whatever?
Yep.
He sent something out. I really like Chris. Used to have him on the air all the time. And he pointed out the Vikings and the NFC North this year, everybody gets 8 home games and 9 road games. But 2 of those road games for the Vikings are now neutral site. And he just pointed out, is it fair to Green Bay, Chicago, and Detroit that the Vikes are going to get 8 home, 7 road, 2 neutral, and those other teams are going to get 8 home and 9 road games?
Yeah.
So, you know, I give Chris credit for stirring the pot a little bit.
Yeah, it's a... I just can't imagine being over there for 2 weeks. That's a long couple of weeks. Like, they're going to be so, so tired after that two-week stretch of football for both the Vikings and the teams that they face. But Vikings, this is the first time it's happened where it's been this. It's been two different locations, and, you know, I think it's like an hour and a half flight. But regardless, that's still a long time to go.
Yeah, that's a long time away from home. But They're flying charters, they're staying in good hotels, they're being fed well, and paid really well. Hey, big thanks to Josh Wheeler, big thanks to all our guests, Jess Myers, Kevin Lynch joining us on the program, Stephen Clark, and also Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic. It's been a lot of fun. Once again, always good to work with Josh. Henry returns tomorrow night here on The Lake Show. News Talk, 830 WCCO. The news and weather coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.